Good morning, everyone. We're ready to start, I think. Congratulations for finding this place. Nice to see you all here. This is, just to be sure, the town hall meeting to discuss the core competencies for public health professionals. My name is Bill Keck. I'm chair of the Council on Linkages and chair and professor emeritus the Division of Community Health Sciences at the Northeastern Ohio University's Colleges now of Medicine and Pharmacy. We'll be joined in the panel this morning by three others. Diane Downing, who is with the Department of Human Services in Arlington County, Virginia, and is also on the faculty at Georgetown University, is with us. She is the chair of the Competencies Work Group, the group that prepared the document that you have in your hands. By the way, if you don't have it in your hands, there are handouts on the back table. We also have Dr. Kathleen Miner with us, who's an associate dean at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. Dr. Miner was a consultant for the competencies project and assisted the work group in the development of the wording for those competencies. And we have also with us Ron Bialik, who's the president of the Public Health Foundation. Our plans for this session this morning are to essentially get us all on the same page, if we can. I'm going to provide a little bit of background about the Council on Linkages and its activities relevant particularly to the core competencies. And then Ron will tell us a bit about what's known about the uses and users of the competencies. As I say, the Public Health Foundation has acted as the staff arm of the Council on Linkages since its inception. Diane, then, who chaired the Core Competencies Work Group, will tell us about the process that was used to develop the competencies. Diane also chaired the effort that led to the first edition of the Council's competencies in 2001, so she's quite experienced at this. Kathy then will describe how the newly revised competency statements are formulated, and then I'll describe our current status, but at that part, perhaps most importantly, as we talk about next steps for the competencies, we'd like to involve you in the conversation. Our major purpose this morning, of course, is to answer any questions you might have about the competencies as they exist at this point, but also to let you know that they're a work in progress, and we are looking for as much input as we can get. There are several ways that that input can come to us. We're using professional meetings like this one to hear from you. And we will also share with you a website that you can go to make comments later if that's more comfortable for you. But we do have a few things that we are particularly interested in getting feedback about, so that once we deal with your questions, we'll ask you some questions to allow you to help us to answer some questions that remain in our minds about how these competencies should be best formulated. Okay. Now, APHA policy requires us to read this, so you should know that there are no financial relationships or commercial interests relevant to this presentation during the past 12 months for any of the four of us. And with that, let me tell you just a little bit about the Council on Linkages. I know some of you know this. I apologize if this is too much of a history lesson for you, but it may help the rest of you who may not be familiar with the Council to have some understanding of who and what we are. The overall objective of the Council, of course, is to improve the relevance of public health education to practice and to promote education throughout one's career. In other words, the Council really came together to respond to the 1988 IOM report finding that public health practice was essentially disconnected from its academic bases. And so we've been brought into existence to try to foster the building of bridges between practice and academia in public health. The Council grew out of the Faculty Agency Forum, which was the first group put together right after the IOM report came out to try to deal with faculty and practice issues. That group had a relatively short existence, went out of existence in 1993, But its major accomplishment was the development of the first iteration of competencies for public health practice. They're still available in what is now an increasingly ancient publication authored by Ron Bialik and friends. The Council on Linkages has been around really since the early 1990s now, and has a number of accomplishments outside of the competencies. I want to just share a few of them with you. We worked with the Association of Schools of Public Health to get practice representatives at each school of public health to try to develop stronger linkages between that academic base and practice settings in that institution's catchment area. We began the process, actually, of developing the community public health practice guidelines. It was the Council on Linkages that developed that concept at first, proved the value and relevance of doing so, and then the CDC, fortunately, was willing to take it over and, of course, manages that process now. Council is working to propose a research agenda for public health and, of course, has promoted the development of academic health departments in the past. And, of course, as we mentioned, has developed its first set of competencies in 2001. We are made up of representatives from the 17 national organizations you see on the screen. Well, current activities are these. In addition to refining and updating the core competencies, we're working on trying to understand the dynamics of the public health workforce pipeline. Difficult issue we're finding, but one that we think we need to understand better. And of course, we continue to work on trying to advance the public health research agenda. Now, the core competencies work group. I said originally we had a set of competencies in 2001 from our first work group. And in the interim now, Council has noted that public health, of course, has evolved significantly since 2001, when the modernization of the forum competencies was completed by the Council on Linkages. The competencies have enjoyed fairly wide usage. And that's reinforced for us the validity of the approach. And so we decided it was time to take another look at these competencies to see if we couldn't do a better job of making them relevant for public health as it exists now and as we hope, if we anticipated correctly, is likely to exist in the short-term future. So we are now in the process of refining and updating them. So I'd like then to ask Ron, if you would, to come to the podium for just a moment and talk to us a little bit about users and uses. Right. And once again, any of the newcomers who haven't picked up a handout, you'll find it on the back table.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you all for attending today. And we have one, immediate past council member. Susan Allen, or Susan Allen was the ASTO representative. You haven't been replaced yet, so she's still one of our council members. So that's great. Thank you for joining us. As Bill noticed, the competencies were originally adopted in 2001, and the council made a commitment to relook at the competencies every 3 years and decide if they needed to be updated, refined, etc. And what happened was 3 years went by, there was a good discussion at the council, and the council decided that, we don't have enough information yet on use. So why revise the competencies if we really don't yet know how they're being used? And I think that was a really good decision on the part of the council membership. Now we have decent data, not great on use, but far more than we had. And you know, with public health, oftentimes we're working with imperfect data. And so we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good. So we have decent data to use. We have data from the National Association of County and City Health Officials with their national profile. And actually, in their profile, it turned out that almost 3/4 of the local health departments were familiar with the core competencies. Frankly, that was far larger than we had imagined. And then out of that 1/4, 65% of them said they actually used the competencies in a variety of different ways. Again, that was much more than we had thought it would be. So that said something to us about the penetration of the competencies, that they were out there in the practice community and actually being used. Then we also looked at state health departments, and a number of state health departments have built the competencies into their learning management systems. There's the TRAIN system. 23 state health departments are involved with that. California, Mark Horton, the commissioner. California is one of the states involved in TRAIN, and the competencies are built in there, so one can look for educational opportunities, training opportunities around the competencies. And then some other systems, like the Illinois Learning Management System, built the competencies in. So we saw then the competencies being a framework that states were beginning to use to organize and deliver training out to the workforce. And then lastly, the council itself took on the task of doing a survey of academic institutions. We surveyed institutions that were providing public health education. So we looked at only accredited institutions, not just schools of public health. We looked at schools of public health, graduate programs, and nursing programs that had public health programs. And that was the reason we did this, is there's a Healthy People 2010 objective that focuses on this, and we agreed to be the data source. And it turned out of the survey respondents, 91% said that they're using the competencies. So this was sufficient evidence for the council to say, well, it's being used. Now, given the changes in the environment that Bill had mentioned, we should have a process to update and refine. Whoops, wrong way. Now, what about the uses? How are people using them? We see that way back, actually, when the linkages first came out, the Utah Department of Health used the competencies to do a workforce assessment. And so, you know, what were people skilled and competent in and whatnot, so that they could then address them through training. Job descriptions and performance evaluations typically go hand in hand, and we're seeing local health departments begin to use this. In Minnesota, a local health department is part of a quality improvement effort, integrated the competencies into job descriptions so that then it could look at monitoring the performance of individuals there. Anybody from Minnesota here? Minnesota Department of Health? I don't know. Were you maybe familiar with this process? Okay. Well, and actually the University of Minnesota School of Public Health, Bill Riley and a cadre of faculty and students were out there helping the health departments in this area. Curricular review and development, we're seeing that many academic institutions, public health training centers, right, use the competencies to look at where are their gaps and also map their courses to the competencies to see what's being delivered and how it's being delivered. And last but not least, discipline-specific competencies. We've seen a lot of discipline-specific competencies like public health nursing, epidemiology, et cetera, where they've used the core competencies as a place to start, and then what else is needed for that particular profession. So we have users, we have uses, and again, it seemed time to move to the next step, which is doing some refinement. Let me turn this now over to Diane Downing, the chair of the Core Competencies Workgroup.
Thank you. Oops, you already turned it. This is the group of people that worked on this new version, refining the core competencies. Is anybody in this group in the room? If you are, would you stand up so you can see? You have at least one person in the room who can share information about the process. It is a diverse group. It was inclusive. There was outreach to people that we knew had the expertise. In addition, at meetings, people who were interested were certainly welcome to participate in the process. It was all done by conference calls. The rules to developing or refining these competencies that we adhered to were there needed to be only one verb allowed per statement. We had lots of verbs. Thanks to Kathy Miner, we learned a lot about competency development. So only one verb per statement, no internal modifiers like adequate. Each competency statement it was required that it be placed in only one of the eight domains. We had a lot of overlap in the previous version. The decision was made to keep the original 8-domain framework because so many people had already developed their own discipline-specific competencies that Ron had talked about using those 8 domains, so we felt we should not change the 8 domains. We worked only with the mid-tier level of the public health workers. So when you look at the competencies, there's, you know, the beginning, mid-tier, senior, worked with mid-tier. Those, for example, those with an MPH or related degree, 5 years of work experience, or people that didn't have a public health degree but had at least 10 years of public health or public health related work experience. Those were the people we had in mind. And the thinking was there was limited funding from this group. We could then go down to entry level or up to the senior level. So it provided a starting point. Probably the end questions.
Yeah.
The end, yes. We'd like you to wait till the end so you can hear the whole. I think Kathy might answer a lot of those questions in her part. Major changes were the addition of informatics throughout the domain. So when you read the 8 domains, you'll see informatics mentioned. The language was standardized, and each competency was made more measurable. We have 2 major questions we would like to reach out to you and to the public with through the next 5, 6, however months of comment period. And one is to look at the field of informatics and see if it is adequately covered and if it's in the correct domains. We're very interested in hearing about that. There was struggle and discussion about where to put informatics. And one of the other things that we struggled with was, should the core sciences of public health, behavioral and social sciences, biostatistics, epidemiology, environmental, public health, and health services administration be listed by name in the public health sciences domain? Okay. I'm going to pass on to Kathy Miner, who just has been, I must say, wonderful to work with. She has guided this process patiently and has been amazing at incorporating comments from a large number of people with diverse opinions facilitated by conference calls. I don't think we ever had a face-to-face meeting. It's all conference calls.
Thanks, Diane. You want to write my boss, because you don't have that opportunity when you're dealing with faculty. Let me say that, first of all, it's been a pleasure to be involved in this process, and I want to thank Ron for involving me. It's been a delight to be able to be involved in something that's so important for the practice of public health throughout this country and maybe even abroad. I will say I had an opportunity to work in Canada, and they also borrowed heavily on the work here that it was done by the Public Health Foundation and the work we did down here. Let me start off, there'll be a little redundancy in some of the comments I'm going to make because redundancy is good. I always like to start off on the working with competencies with this quote because there's a lot of truth in it. Competence is like beauty, because it is in the eye of the beholder. And when you're taking a look at a competence in somebody's practice, sometimes we know it and we see it, kind of like other things, pornography, things, beauty, and all that sort of thing. And it's important that we, when we write something like a competency statement, we want other people to read that statement and understand it the way we understand it, so that when we interpret it in one state and one university, and in one course led by one instructor or the instructor and the student, everybody agrees to what it means. And that's hard to do. Language means something. And it isn't something frivolous. Because in a sense, a competency statement is a contract between an instructor and a learner. And if we don't do it that way, or if you want to think, it's not only an instructor and learner, it's between an employer and an employee. And if we don't use those words to mean something, then why bother writing them? And that's why you have to sometimes play the role of a competency cop, which was my job. It's the first time in one of the few moments in my life I felt I had power. So I'm going to repeat some things that Diane said, and I'm going to this is where the redundancy comes in, but I'm going to try to give you a rationale why. Each competency statement can have only one verb. And why is that? Because multiple verbs turn competencies into multiple competency statements. And if you have, you know, compare and contrast, or list, you know, define, evaluate, and then string on some extra content at the end, that really makes them three competency statements. And so if you have three competency statements in one statement, and someone looks at it as a opportunity to make something in one course, then as an instructor, for example, then I can pick one verb and make that my class, and somebody else can take another verb and make their class, and then now you have two different classes or two different meanings for different places. So you can't do that. That's what the cop gets to say. And I got to say that, and that was a lot of fun.
A lot.
I did. The other thing, if you notice the next rule down there, is each statement needs a verb that's measurable. A verb like understand isn't measurable, because what I think of understanding, somebody else may not think is understanding. And one way to think about that is if you're an expert in a field, and I'll just pick a field that's not mine. One I got to work with, another field is an epidemiologist. Anybody in here an epidemiologist? Okay, epidemiologist, excuse me. Epidemiologists believe everybody else should be an epidemiologist. And so they believe everybody should really understand what sensitivity and specificity really means. And when that happens is they want us to be able to calculate sensitivity and specificity, not just define it. So understanding it in one context is different than understanding it in another context. And so that word is a fuzzy word, and you can't do that. But a lot of times when you put people in a room to define a competency, and they say, yeah, I really want them to understand it, and one person believes that understanding it is defining it, and another person believes understanding it is calculating it, that's fuzzy. Can't do that. You have to either decide it's calculating it or defining it. And so competency cops don't let you do that. And that was fun. But if you want to be able to settle an argument, you have to sit there and duke it out. If you want to settle the argument and get over with it because you're tired of figuring out what word you really mean, then put the word understanding and move on. And that's what happens. You understand what I'm talking about? Now we can move on. Next one, each statement can have no hidden modifiers like adequate, appropriate, or, you know, suitably, enough. Those words are really hidden things inside of it. Because if you say something does it adequately, how do you determine adequate? That's a hidden code word for something that determines things like another standard. Because adequate means somebody says, okay, what determines adequate in your mind versus someone determining adequate in somebody else's mind? If there's a term, if you were to think of it, step out of your own realm of appreciation, someone flying an airplane, the pilot should be able to fly it adequately. Would you ever want a plane flown by a pilot inadequately? So if a pilot goes to plane flying school, you think there should be a standard that's set, then say the standard. Like, for example, JCO standards or something like that. Do you understand what I mean? I can move on. If you follow what I'm saying is that those words, like adequately, if you were teaching a course, would you ever teach someone to do it inadequately? What kind of an instructor would you be? And there are people who absolutely insist on putting those words in there, but they're really hidden words for something that means that you feel better because you put it there. And if you sit there and say you can't use that word, it makes people nervous, but you take them out because all they are make people feel better. And it forces language that's clear. I love doing that. The other one, as you've already heard before, that each statement may, if you have a framework like domains, the eight domains, and you say it can only be in one place, but people then say, but everybody needs to communicate science, for example, and that, well, you have to learn to communicate, but you have a whole domain on communication. But we have to be able to communicate our science, or we have to communicate our cultural competency. But pretty soon, everybody has to communicate everything, and pretty soon, everything is everywhere. Now you have no domains. And then if you start to say it can only be one place, then you start to really clean up what those domains truly mean. And that is a tough one as well. But that's what a COP is all about. And I didn't get to write any kind of things that would make people get punished. But if you, what happens, language really means something. And if you believe language means something, then competencies begin to mean something. And that was what my job was, and it was a lot of fun. Here are some examples of the competencies that became clearer as we started to work on them. They're on the paper there. Some of them may not still mean very much to people, and they have to be looked at. Because as the competency COP, it wasn't my job to determine what the science meant. And it's important that when you have folks like me get hired to do stuff like this, it isn't a competency COP to determine what the stem of the statement means. I've been very fortunate to work in disciplines that I am not a member of the discipline. For example, with the epidemiology competencies, I'm not an epidemiologist, and I cannot tell people what the science is. It is beyond my scope of expertise. And it's important that folks like you look very carefully at what the stem means and what the verb is that matches that stem. Because what happens is, if you really mean describe, and you look at the stem, is it what you want that person to do is describe that content? Because that's a different cognitive skill than something like evaluate that content. It's a higher order of cognitive functioning. And here are some examples that I put up there just for you to be able to look at. And there's across those domains. And it takes people like yourself who care about the function of a mid-career public health professional. Is that the level of a skill at that kind of content that you think people should be able to function at doing this kind of work in the profession we all care about? Now, this is the redundancy again, because this is important. They should only have one level of skill. They have a common nomenclature for our profession. They have no modifiers or qualifiers, such as appropriate or adequate. And they were arranged in a framework by domains. And I used the word domains, and all of a sudden I got challenged by somebody. He says, what do those domains mean? I don't know what domains. Okay, think of them as big skill areas. The other thing I want to put up there is rules of thumb. Sometimes when you get into this, I just want to summarize it, that higher level of skills can be built on lower level of skills. And this is just a summary statement that Diane talked about, that you don't have, if you think about cognitive skill level, and this is competency 101, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but if you can evaluate something, then you don't have to worry about also listing defining something, because evaluating is a higher order of a skill. And if you can evaluate it, we can assume that you can also define it. So you don't have to have the competencies that are leading up to higher level of skills. Higher level skills are more complex and require more time to achieve mastery. In other words, if you're going to be able to have, remember how the, are you all familiar with the original set that was done that were available that had three tiers? Anybody completely clueless about that? Because I'm making a few assumptions here, you know what that means. That we looked at the mid-tier, so that these are representing mid-tiers, and what that means is that after these are looked at, there may be some work, and I guess Ron, you may want to speak to this later, that we could take it and then find verbs that would look at a lower level of tier and a higher level of tier, which may change the verbs to a lower level scale and higher level scale, and that's what this other one is talking about. And you might be able to upgrade the verb level to make a higher order of skill for the third higher tier. That's what this is talking about. And that's sort of a summary of level of thumb about how these might be modified for a more advanced level third tier or a more entry level lower tier. And that's what this sort of competency rule of thumb is. Does that make sense? Did I just muck this up? We can talk about it in questions.
Kathy, we understand.
You understand. Yeah, they understand. Okay, moving on. I want to close this comment because I think we have to move on. Hermits have no peer pressure. Did you know that? If we were all sitting in a cave all by ourselves, we wouldn't have to worry about any of these competencies. And therefore, it's time for me to sit down. Thank you very much.
Never follow a banjo act, as they say. Well, just a couple of things. The Council on Linkages unanimously adopted the version you have in your hands. If you don't, by the way, there are, again, I know a few of you just come in. There are some handouts on the back table in May. And we've entered a period of testing or vetting them, if you will. We're trying to share them and to see whether the deliberations of the work group will hold up in the rigors of the workplace. So far, we have presented them for public review and comment at the two annual meetings noted on the slide. And of course, we're here today at the APHA annual meeting to do this, but we also have a website that's available, and we intend to take comments through the middle of December or so, and then our work group will review those comments, and presumably sometime early in 2009, the council will come out with a final version of the competencies for use. Now, we hope to have an internet connection to demonstrate this website to you. Unfortunately, we don't have it. So I want to ask Ron if he would to come back for just a moment and describe to you a little bit what this website is like. So in case you decide to go to it, you'll feel comfortable knowing how to use it appropriately.
Thank you, Bill, and I strongly encourage people to go to the website. The URL is in the handout that you have on the back of the first page. I guess that would make it the second page. The website is up and live now, and you can comment on each individual competency if you wish. You go to the website, you can click on a domain, and it'll explode out, and then you could say, you think we should keep this particular competency, you think we should get rid of this competency, you have no opinion, or you think it should be edited. And then if you say edited or comment on it, then a comment box will explode out for you where you can put the comments in. You can also then provide comments on general overview comments on the whole domain as well as the whole set. So what we're trying to do is to organize this so and make it as easy as possible for individuals to go in there and assist us and the whole public health field in getting the best comments and consensus we can develop. When we did this for 2001, for those competencies, we had over 1,000 sets of comments. That was before the internet was real active. It was still getting there. We expect to have a large number of comments, and these will be used. We've set up the database in a way so that we can slice and dice the information many different ways, and this will inform the process. We do go through every single set of comments. The other thing you should know is there's a demographic piece to the comment site. We try to capture basic demographics of how long have you been in the workforce, what type of work setting are you coming from, things of that nature, because we want to be sure that we have people throughout the field, entry level, mid-career, senior level, epidemiologists, nurses, et cetera, environmental scientists commenting on this. Last time, we found that we had not very many environmental health professionals commenting, so we reached out to our member, the National Environmental Health Association, and asked them to push forward. So the demographic information is important to us so that we know who it is who's commenting on this, so that we can be sure to be as inclusive as possible. Please, please, please go to the site. At a meeting like this, you can only get to more of the general types of comments typically. If you want to be real specific, offer us new language, ask questions, that's where you could do on the, you could do that real well on the site. Okay? Thank you, Bill.
And of course, you all know the rules for how one writes competencies, so we'll get excellent suggestions from you as they come along. Well, what we want to do now in the remaining time is open the floor up to get your participation. Listed here the two questions that Diane mentioned when she was speaking with you that the work group is particularly interested in. And of course, we have a third one. If you have any ideas of what the council can do to help you using the core competencies in whatever environment you find yourself working, that would be helpful for us as well, because besides just producing the competencies, as Ron mentioned, we try to track how they're being used. And occasionally we've been involved in trying to develop tools to help people use products developed by the Council on Linkages. So any suggestions you have in that area would be welcome as well. So I want to open it up now to questions and comments from you, and I'll ask, tell us who you want to answer the question if you can, and then we'll try to get them to the microphone to be sure everyone can hear. So start here, yes.
I have a dilemma. And it's the two sets of competencies that are out there, the ASPH and the Council on Linkages. If you could reconcile those, it would make my life much easier. Can you comment on the status, or is that a direction, or
something? No. Well, I want me to try, and then Ron's more skilled at answering that question than me, but we'll try. When the Council on Linkages developed its first set of competencies, what we anticipated was that we were hoping we were providing a base of information that people could work with. And we fully expected that folks would take those competencies and adapt them to their own use, or perhaps use them as a base for something else, for specialty competencies for emergency workers or public health nurses or something like that. And indeed, some of that has occurred. The Association of Schools of Public Health decided they wanted to develop competencies for MPH graduates, the sort of person you're dealing with. And so they went to this process as well. They looked and used the Council on Linkages competencies, but also took from other competency bases and, of course, the skills of their own particular work group members. And they developed a set of competencies that they thought was appropriate for measuring what an MPH graduate should be able to do. So it's focused on that particular group. Ours tend to be more generally focused on the broader public health workforce. That still means you have to make a choice or develop your own set from the two. Many academic programs and institutions, of course, have decided the simplest thing to do would be to use the ASPH competencies because they are focused on particularly the group that you're working with.
Oh.
Does that help you at all? I'm sorry?
Any reconciliation in the future? People.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. If I could comment, I mean, the Council on Linkages competencies, I'm Janet Fish from UNC, were about the public health practice workforce, which is much broader than the MPH graduates. And the MPH graduates, they're focused more on the classic core of MPH programs. There's a lot of people out there that don't have MPHs. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of one of the things that everyone hears me say ad nauseum on the work group, and then I come back I think this work group did a phenomenal job, and it was hard for me to even watch it happen because I saw it really moving towards really defining tier two, which is what the first set, it was very hard because there were different levels. And so we have a tier two, which is this, which is really, and that's what we're gonna think, is this really kind of implies an MPH graduate, though also experience. But there are those of us, and Ron's coming to the meeting tomorrow of the Public Health Training Centers to talk to us because we are very interested in taking on part of that, taking on the role, and I've said this to you, but of creating tier one. You know, mm-hmm. bringing these down to people, and that's why I kind of shake my head at entry level, because in North Carolina, I encounter many, many people who are in mid-level positions who score no awareness whatsoever in non-essential services and that kind of thing. So that's what, I mean, so the, I don't know if that can help explain it, but now that we're, this is strongly in tier two, the MPH graduates, I'm not sure, it might be even harder to differentiate. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
Well, it might. I think all of these competencies are, of course, a general set of competencies that may not fit exactly in every environment. So most MPH programs and schools of public health define their own missions. While there's, of course, a great deal of similarity among those missions, if you look at them, there are also some significant differences. And it may be that none of these competencies would be entirely adequate or appropriate for you. So these are starting places, in my view, at least, and it's your job, really, to look at them and see whether or not they're all appropriate for you. You might want to add some, you might want to modify some. We do think this newer version is better written in terms of what a competency should be, and perhaps just the style of these and the rules that Kathy has revealed with you might be helpful in looking at your own use of competencies, particularly if you want to make any additions or alterations of these. But none of these are dictated from on high as the thing to use. They're all there really meant just to provide an aid to you in figuring out how best to apply them to your own particular situation. Go to Suzanne, and here, and then in the back.
And I wanted to add a comment to the discussion we just had, actually from two different perspectives. As a longtime practitioner, part of what I really valued about the earlier set was that it recognized, it gave a language to the progression of skills across three different levels, which is very useful for setting up the job description and explicit workforce or workplace-based training process or evaluation. So that part of it is very different. And then, I work with Steve currently, and I just checked with the Steve staff person next to me that I could say this, mm-hmm. just to reiterate the point that Bill made, that there's Steve, and as part of the accreditation process, does not dictate any particular competency set. It needs to be appropriate in the context of the educational process, mm-hmm. and the mission and context of that institution. But most schools and programs start, whichever set they start with, modify it to what they need. So nobody is very often just sort of picking up and using any set wholesale anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Yes. Ron, you want to?
One more comment about this, too. We've had some brief discussion with ASPH staff, and one of the things we're going to try to do after these competencies are finalized is to do some type of a crosswalk and see if we could come out with some type of a joint short document of why this and this. And the other thing we're going to attempt to do, and you know, we'll see how that works, is to see as ASPH revises its competencies if they could use the same language when it's the same competency, and use the same domains if it's the same, so people could see that a little bit more easily. That was suggested early on, but the work groups tend to, the people who are working on it for the MPH competencies use the core, but then digressed a bit, and so the we'll try to do that cross matching, but it will be difficult to do, but we want to try to help the field.
Yes.
I have a question. Is this document available on the website?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is
calls gone out to, say, within APHA to the sections and affiliates informing them, other than like in the Nation's Health, but a specific request for data-wide input?
Two things. When you go to the competencies website, there's an area where there are a couple of links, and one of the links is to that document as well as the original set of competencies, so people could look at those, and the process that we use is a paper on that as well. So that is there. The site is just going live today, so the call to, you know, the APHA, the various sections, affiliates, etc., has not yet occurred. APHA, Bill Keck is the APHA representative, and I'll let him speak to how that might happen. We'll make a request. No, okay. There are staff, each of the organizations on the council have staff. Carlene Batty has been the one who's been the APHA staff person. She's done an exceptional job. We thank her for actually this room, the session that she was able to get us, and we'll talk with her about how to push this out to the membership.
Yes, the back.
Getting to your third question there, I think that as instructors or as educators, as faculty, one thing that we always struggle with looking at these is the as evidenced by that follows every one of these competencies. Yes. So, you know, when we're looking at our learners, for example, we look at do they have basic skills in these areas, are they proficient, or are they distinguished, and what does that mean? And some guidance on what is the expectation. So if you are, let's say, the public health officer in a local county, and you're looking at the core competencies, and you're looking at a learner that comes out of our university, what do you expect that they, what does proficient mean? And even in some of the core competencies, like let's say the second communication one, the term proficiency is used. So what does that mean? That would be a real help, I think, in terms of implementing this from a university perspective, to make sure that the learners who are coming out with the skills everyone wants. Mm-hmm.
Anyone want to comment on that? No? All right, thank you. Yes.
I have a comment on the second and third questions, and hopefully a resource for your group. The reality is public health is a field that takes learning from math and science and medicine and psychology and marketing and business. And it's difficult enough to explain to my parents or to people in the community what public health is without our having language common to ourselves about what we are and what we include. So I would advocate for having specific language that says, these are the core areas in public health. These might not be completely inclusive, but these are the ones that within public health you can expect we will have some knowledge and competencies about. And for the third bullet, what would assist us in making this usable at the practitioner level? Again, for me, it would be specificity. Recently, the Office of Management and Budget did a great job and considered community health workers and whether they ought to be added as a classification at that level. I represent the Directors of Health Education here in California, the 61 local health departments, and we supported the office doing that. What we were concerned about was the consideration that perhaps they ought to bring community health workers into the health education category, which in our minds was very counter to our training as health educators, because there are very specific competencies that the schools of public health and the public health programs have to be able to have master's level health educators. And what we have done here in California is we actually have the standards for directors of health education and entry-level public health educators that we would love to be able to show you. And we got as specific as we could about what we believe are the core competencies of health educators and taking the dimensions that you have around assessment and talking about what contributions health educators have to community health assessment and the analysis of data or in program planning or in the areas of community engagement and community organizing. So we feel like we have tried very hard for our profession so we can explain to our kids what we do, to be specific about our competencies, and we would like to encourage that this level we do measure. Mm-hmm.
Does
All
that
right.
include the
all right, thank you.
Responsibilities? It's all? Okay, excellent. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do it in North Carolina. We've done that in North Carolina, but not to that extent.
And I've got
All right. I'm sorry?
Yes, sure.
Just a response.
At the ASTO NACHO meeting, there was a gentleman there from the Los Angeles County Health Department, and LA County Health Department has taken the initial set of the core competencies, and they said, you know, it was too much for us to handle. And so they actually consolidated it down to about, I think it was 20, and added to it some specificity for the use in position descriptions and evaluations, and they've sent that to us. And actually, I think that's a real interesting approach, and we're going to be looking at, you know, tools like that that people use in the field. But clearly, I can give you a card afterwards. I'm not sure if my web, if my email address was up there, but we would like that information you have. Thank you.
Yes, back there, and then for, mm-hmm. Yes. maybe it's a linkages and an ASPH and a SEEF and an EPHA sitting down and you just have these words using it as. There was almost an embarrassment of riches. Is that part of the problem? Yeah. Well, yeah, it's still a decision you have to make. And these, of course, were intended, Diane, I believe, as we said, for the kind of person you've described, the entry level. But you also then have the MPH competencies that say what the academicians expect in consultation with the practitioners for an MPH graduate to be able to accomplish. You have to reconcile the two at this point. I think there aren't links on the Public Health Foundation website, are there, to these others? It might be something we could consider, I suppose, as a way to try to help people at least learn what is available out there. But I don't think the Council on Linkages is in a position at this point to really do much more than it's doing at this point, because there just isn't the funding there and the capacity to do it.
Yes.
As with health education and many other disciplines, public health nursing had competencies through American Nurses Association, specifically for public health nursing when these came out. And the four organizations responsible for making sure public health nursing tries to standardize what we do actually took these competencies and took the public health nursing competencies developed by American Nurses Association and developed public health nursing competencies. So they used the same format, they pulled them together. And when in textbooks for public health nursing, they tend to talk about both. They tend to say, here's the Council on Lincoln's competencies, we did this, and then we came to the Quad Council competencies, and this is what they look like. And that's what I think most nursing academicians look to, knowing that the ANA competencies have merged those. So I don't know that that helps with the thought of MPH or not.
That they do more than just understand.
Right.
They can do it. But my other half of the question is this. Many people across our nation, especially where we're at, a lot of them have got maybe 10 years of public health under their belt or more. They do not have an MPH. They're not going back. So what I need, because I'm going to move into this area, is I want to use those core competencies to take that middle tier, or whatever we're calling it, and to provide some sort of training on site, not only for our public health workforce in our district health department, but for those surrounding. We live in a tri-state area, to try to provide something so current public health professionals can come together, get some of this training in areas of the core competencies in which they need some more, without having to send them back to the university, which they're not going to do. So I need that. If you can help me and everybody else that's having to work with that group of people, that would be wonderful. Or if you can connect me to someone who's already using core competencies in that way,
I could help. Because Southeast Public Health Training Center covers Kentucky, and I'm already working with some folks there on that stuff very similarly. So I have stuff I can work with you directly through my state.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. There's also,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also David Knapp in the Kentucky Department of Health, the Kentucky Train. He develops a lot of training, I know, and utilizes. Okay, so that you guys have the connection. Cool.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bill, can I say something? Bill?
Yes.
Can I say something?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say one other thing about the competency statements. There's 2 points I want to make. One, these are statements at one level of proficiency. If you're thinking about translating this into curricula, whether it's graduate level or undergraduate level curricula, remember you can break them down into learning objectives. And if you have a something like describe, you want to break it down into name, define underneath, and that becomes your learning objectives for an experience in a classroom. Do you understand that? And if you want to build it up, you could think of that as a learning objective for something that may be even higher order. So it may be a learning objective that might even have a higher order function like evaluate, because you think your course is a more advanced course, and this is a competency that is actually only a learning objective in a higher order course. Do you understand what I just said for those of you who develop curriculum in a classroom? Because in many cases, your particular experience in a classroom which you were talking about training people who have 10 years of experience, and this is a mid-tier competency, may only be a learning objective for a higher order person. And when you start to crosswalk between two sets of competencies, ASPH and these, you may find that you're crosswalking the content, not the objective core statement, because they're written all over the place. And what happens is they don't line up. We just tried to do a crosswalking experience between ASPH and the health education ones, and it took a year. I don't want to go through that. We don't have time for that. The reality is it's very difficult because language in one field doesn't match language in another field. And what I'm trying to say to you, the translation of these into curricula takes time. Think of them as learning objectives at one level, or they may be the higher order objective, and then you have learning objectives underneath when you write your syllabus, if you want to think of it that way. Does that help a little bit?
Well, there's also through the Council of Ages website, there's adopted the competency-based curriculum toolkit. So that's another way to help translate that.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Comment on the third bullet as well as an offer of another resource. What would be, I'm a member of the Bay Area Regional Health Inequities Initiative in the San Francisco Bay Area here in California. And one of the things that we noticed as we took a look at the core public health competencies is that the concept of social justice and health inequities is not embedded into what is expected of us as public health professionals. And we believe that that's the foundation of public health. So what would be useful would be in thinking about this area, thinking about whether or not the language around social justice and health inequities makes sense to insert. What we are doing in Far Heights, our organization is really taking a look at the competency areas and how they can be applied to the work that we want to do in addressing and eliminating health inequities. And we're actually presenting health department internal assessment tools this afternoon at 2:30, mm-hmm. plug-in, to talk about the work that we're doing in ensuring that our public health departments have the structure and the workforce to be able to address and eliminate health inequities.
That's interesting. Did you folks deal with the issue of values, if you will, as they relate to competencies?
Well, we had an ethical
Mm-hmm. I can tell you what we didn't. Mm-hmm. What we didn't do was include any affective domain, which is an entire set of domain of learning that deals with the value statements, a characterization of what a profession is like, and we didn't deal with the psychomotor, which is the skill-oriented ones. And that is because the affective is too squishy. People think of it as touchy-feely stuff, which are perfectly good domains. And the psychomotor ones are, you know, how you manipulate things. However, we stuck pretty much with the cognitive domains. We dealt with content around affective domains, and is embedded in the ethical component. But if you feel strongly, you know, submit them. I think that's what Ron would say.
That specific language would be even better.
Exactly.
Other questions here and then in the back.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, going back to the very first question about how I'm a program director at University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. One of my missions here at this meeting is to remind people that Hurricane Ike hit Galveston and it's a real mess. So, you know, news. But we have an MPH program, and we use both sets, and we use them sort of, I think, for what I'm told they're intended for. So we use the ASPH one to sort of look at our core classes and to have our students think, when we give you the MPH degree and we put those initials after, we're telling the world that our university has given you this set of basic skills. And this is sort of our thing. But then I tell them to look at the Council on Linkages ones, because they're going to, some of them come in as mature students and then they're going out into careers. Think about the career you've had, the career you want. What are the skills that you already have? What do you further need to develop? And then you use the Council on Linkages ones to self-identify as you develop your practice experience and your culminating experience and other classroom projects where you have some flexibility. What is the set of skills you want identified to work on? And then they have to do that with their faculty. So we sort of use both for different parts of the curriculum and different goals. And we have a small program again with mature students, so we're able to do that a little bit better. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I would agree. And I came from a practice school, and I'm more recently in academic academy. And my observation observation was that the ASPH were written by people who are primarily in the academy. And the linkages were written primarily by people in practice. And for us to use them, the practicum experience that we require lends itself more toward the linkages. The in-class experience lends itself more toward that. But in asking people how they chose, what I heard in a meeting yesterday was who they knew, who was on which work group, and the timing at which the sets were being vetted matched the time they were doing their breakup. So it wasn't really conscious. It was an artifact of the process. So I think there's the potential to work further on this to really do a service to the field. I'm a little concerned it does a little bit of a disservice because we're always talking about how public health can't be defined. We're so different. We're so comprehensive that we can't come up with one set of competencies that we can all agree on should be educated to be able to go out and work on day one rather than you can write a great term paper. Nobody wants to hire you to do that. Yeah, I agree with that, and I think it's maybe the direction to move in.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Good. Do you want to comment on this, Janet? Or?
Yeah, well, just that I know my school of public health, you know, it's a research, that's its big focus, that it took ASPH competencies and it took the SEEP core requirements to get the school to even begin to think cross-cutting. So that was an important step. But the next step is, and that's why I'm at the Institute for Public Health, the outreach arm, is that we're saying these are the core council linkages competencies are those competencies that people need to go out and work in local health departments, state health departments, who really need a workforce, but we're not turning them out. We're trying to make that bridge so that students understand and have the practical experiences and stuff like that as this is what you could do that's broad, cross-cutting, core, public, and it's practice and really benefits health departments. Those who are not getting our students.
It's a nice dream. There's a question in the back. Yes.
Hi, my name is Noelle Bizzini Barricut. I'm with Los Angeles County Department of Public Health and part of the team in LA who's been looking at the.
Could you speak up just a little bit for me? Sorry. Actually, I suppose Veranda told me if I'm misspeaking here, but one of the things, as Ron suggested earlier, that we've done is to try to track how these things are being used. And we haven't emphasized that too much in terms of what's going on from now, but that's still something we need to do so that we can gather these kinds of experiences and they can inform what I assume one day will be the next iteration of this, perhaps doing a better job of working towards something that's more generally useful.
The work we've been doing has been very tedious and laborious, and we can only imagine how much harder it was when you were starting from scratch with nothing.
aren't reinventing the wheel. It can help improve our the next step, you know, and move ours to the
next. Well, yes, Ron, the Public Health Foundation is anticipating being able to collect these things in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have examples of use on the site, but the examples need updating and refreshing and new examples. And this is very unique to what you have, too. And to the extent you're willing to share it and have it on the website where others can go and borrow from you, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
And I just want to support what she is saying in that in my health department in San Mateo County, out of the about 1,000 people who work in that health department, there's maybe 10 of us who have a public health background. Mm-hmm. And I think then it becomes that much more important for us to be clear about what a public health department is and what its functions are, because 10 people are not enough to just say, hey, why don't we think about it this way? Unless we're very clear about, as a public health department, you need A, and the specificity about A, that would be really useful to us, because unless we bring out, like you said, more public health trained people, we really need clear standards on mm-hmm. what we ought to be doing. Yeah.
Good. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You've noted that this is the current competencies are for mid-level. Will the council be looking at entry-level as in the first door?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Will the council be developing entry-level competencies as initially or until?
Depends on you want to take that. It will depend on several things.
well, for one thing, Janet had mentioned earlier on that the Public Health Training Center directors have, some of them have sort of volunteered to help develop. I think it was the entry level, the tier one. So we may take you up on that. And then you know we anticipate longer term funding for the council. Now what's happened is we went through a period of a lot of uncertainty where we've had to patch together funds and we mothballed ourselves for about 6 months at one point, got 9 months of funding, took on the commitment to develop the draft, had to sort of mothball ourselves again, and now it looks like we have more sustainable funding from CDC. So we do anticipate doing this, and that will be, yeah. Because we hear that call from the field that we need to finish the job. And thank you to the Public Health Training Centers.
But funding for this stuff has been much more difficult to find over the past 3 or 4 years. You're all voting in a short time, I think, it'd be important to do.
I want to mention one other thing about the relationship of the competencies to practice. One thing we did with the initial set, and we've started to do with this set, is crosswalk it to the essential public health services, because after all, you want to be sure that the competencies help people deliver effective essential public health services. We will do that. I've started thinking about, and I probably shouldn't be thinking about this, but you know, the accreditation standards and how this might relate. Well, those are organizational, but you want to have people who can deliver, and so you know, and performance standards, and so there are a lot of things we might also want to crosswalk it with. Maybe we'll ask for the public health training centers to help with that too.
That's kind of cases that comes up with health educators. North Carolina,
Educators. Yep. Well. Yeah.
We have to have the competencies in there.
Yes.
Hey, good morning. I'm Kennedy Ross from St. George's University in Grenada, so this is appropriate not just to the U.S. We are currently going through the process of doing the self-study for CEPH accreditation, one of the schools outside of the U.S. looking towards that. And we've used the ASPH criteria for competencies to look at our program, and less than a month ago, I broke it down into about 20, I mentioned that for another program, where we sent it to the Ministry of Health in Grenada to find out, are people in the Ministry of Health performing these functions? Because what we realized is there are not many persons who are trained in public health in a lot of the ministries in the Caribbean. So we're doing a pilot test in Grenada to see if what we're teaching and the core competencies are appropriate to them, and we're expecting the feedback when I go back next week, and hopefully use that as a basis for asking the ministries of health in the other countries where we have students from, and we have from about 40 different countries, to see if what we're doing is in line, because with the CEPH accreditation process, we have to submit our self-study And this session has been very helpful, and I look forward to going on the site and getting more information, because I must admit I did not use the linkages criteria, but the ASPH one, and it's been very helpful. All right.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have just a couple of minutes left. We have, yes.
Good morning. Mark Horton from the state of California. On the second and actually the third points, is there a backup document, or are you to anticipate backup documents that would help solve some of these problems? There's a number of terms throughout the competencies that refer to other things like the five sciences or the, you know, mm-hmm. the 10 essential. Will there be a background or a supportive documents to sort of help individuals?
You mean links to the 10 essential services, right. Links what to the SEAF criteria?
Yes.
We, I suppose, could do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we could do that.
It's something we hadn't thought about, but mm-hmm. when the actual competencies are presented on the website, you can just have the hyperlink right there.
Yeah.
Rather than just having a bunch of links at the end. So that's a good,
yeah.
I hadn't thought about it.
I think that would help. Good,
and
thank you.
That would help us, I think.
But kind of, yeah, we're all in public health speak. You know, get to the
right.
point where we sort of, everybody knows what the 10 essential services are, right? Well, maybe not. Yes, they don't. Thank you. Good reminder. Other comments or questions in the last moment we have? Yes. Well, I think we'd welcome any comment you'd care to make. If you think the wording could be clarified somehow, it would be good for us to know that. On the website is set up to allow you to do that, to make those suggestions, yes. So we're interested in that. Of course, we're particularly interested in anything we might have missed that you think is important, things that you think might be misstated or inappropriately stated and so on. All right, well, I think we're supposed to end about 10 minutes before 10. My watch says that's about what it is. I don't see any other hands, so let me just thank you all for participating. It's been very helpful for us. Appreciate your input. Thank you.